The Inside Transportation Podcast is sponsored by Ford Motor Company. Built on the belief that freedom of movement drives human progress from connectivity to autonomy, AI to machine learning, Ford has one simple goal: to improve mobility for its customers. To learn more about Ford's work in mobility, autonomous vehicles, and their corporate efforts to improve mobility for its customers, visit corporate.ford.com. That's corporate.ford.com. The Inside Transportation Podcast is also sponsored by Fenwick & West. Fenwick & West is one of the world's first and leading law firms dedicated to technology and transportation. Learn more about how Fenwick can help companies tackle the complex legal and business issues of autonomous transportation at fenwick.com. That's F-E-N-W-I-C-K.com. Hey everyone, thank you for listening to the Inside Transportation Podcast, a production of Inside.com. This is our weekly podcast where we discuss transportation trends that you need to know about to stay ahead of the curve. My name is Johan Marino, and I'm the writer of the Inside Transportation and Inside Electric Vehicles newsletters, and I am joined here by my co-host, angel investor, podcaster, Inside.com CEO, and the only man in Silicon Valley who knows how to say Elon Musk's new baby's name, Jason Calacanis.
I actually don't know, but great to be here. And I think
you,
I know
you want to give it a try.
No, I know it's an X, and I'm sure we'll all learn it shortly. But yeah,
yes,
crazy times.
So
right
for reference,
now,
it's X Ash Archangel 12.
Oh, I knew that. I knew it's Archangel 12, which is that. I saw the Joe Rogan clip where he explained it's the plane and everything.
Yeah. So first of all, thanks for all the positive feedback we've been getting on the podcast. We really appreciate it. If you listened all the way through last week's podcast, here's a little treat. So I'm going to follow up with all of you guys on the question about distracted driving. So while there are no laws expressly prohibiting actions like eating, grooming, reading, reaching for objects on the floor, changing clothes, or changing the radio while driving in many states, if an officer does see you causing a disturbance while driving caused by one of these actions, they can give you a reckless driving ticket or a speed unsafe for conditions ticket. So with this kind of ticket, you can get points on your license, a fine, or even jail time in most states. So keep in mind, you may want to call your local police department's office for up-to-date rules, but I would definitely advise against changing clothes while driving. I don't know what you have to say about that, Jason, but...
Yeah, I mean, that's ridiculous. You know, you should not be changing clothes. Don't do anything while driving except driving. It's very tempting when you have, like, a car that stays in the lane or has adaptive cruise control to kind of get distracted. What I think these tools are really best for is saving you when you do make a mistake, but you shouldn't introduce mistakes.
Right. I agree with that. And if you have any questions that you would like to get answered on the podcast next week, feel free to shoot them my way. It's johan@inside.com or jason@inside.com, right? If they want to.
Yeah, Jason at Inside works.
Jason@inside.com.
Yep.
But we're going to jump into the hottest news topics of the week. It's been a very slow week, I'm sure, for anyone who's been following.
Nothing happened this week.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, everyone. I don't even know if I have to explain this story. I think everybody knows what's happened over the past 2 days with Tesla CEO Elon Musk. He threatened to move Tesla's headquarters outside of California amid a legal battle with Alameda County over the coronavirus lockdown. He then resumed production and said he would be willing to get arrested over the situation. So some background here. The state of California actually approved manufacturing to reopen a few days ago, I believe. And Alameda County, which is where Tesla's Fremont production facility is located, actually said, hold on, we're not reopening manufacturing, which angered Elon. And he went ahead and just started production anyway. So Tesla published a return to work playbook, which is like a 37-page outline of health and safety procedures that would be followed when they reopened the facility. And they were apparently working with the county to try to, you know, have like a formal agreement for reopening, but you know, the company just went ahead and sued Alameda County and even encouraged, Elon encouraged shareholders to sue Alameda County to recoup damages from the county. So what's your take on this, Jason? I'm sure you have a lot to say.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's actually kind of straightforward. You know, you have a local jurisdiction disagreeing with the governor of the state. And I guess the question is, you know, why should every other auto manufacturer be allowed to open and not this one? It seems mm-hmm. very selective. There might be some information we don't have, is my guess. Mm-hmm. But Alameda County seems to be quite ungrateful for the fact that production of cars is occurring in California and really not allowing them to go back to work when they put in. There's two things that I think are very important that people need to understand here is one, it's optional, right? People do not have to come back to work. Mm-hmm. And it's optional on multiple levels. I think Tesla has made it optional. And of course, you could collect unemployment and make it optional yourself, even if they didn't. Mm-hmm. Nobody's holding a gun to anybody's head. And I think it's something we're going to have to get used to as we reopen is that there might be people who don't want to come back to work. And so if right. you don't want to come back to work, that is your right. And it's the right of the company to not go out of business and shut down. And there's got to be some common sense between, you know, when people are allowed to come back and the safety measures that are used and the people who come back. Like, and nobody's saying a 70-year-old person with diabetes and a heart condition should go back to work anywhere. I think most people understand that. This is a disease. This is the coronavirus is something that is a virus that affects a certain group of people dramatically and another group of people barely. And so mm-hmm. if it's young people going back to work and they're taking the precautions, there's probably such a small amount of risk that, you know, certainly the losing of your livelihood would be a greater risk. And that's where we're kind of getting to right now is can Americans make their own decision if they want to go back to work? Can companies make their own decision if they want to go back to work? Or does a local politician get to decide this issue? I think that people should decide if they go back to work or not. That's my right. personal belief.
And an unelected local official that made this call, which is yeah. something that Elon kind of keeps repeating. But one thing that Tesla or, you know, Elon Musk said he was going to do was move Tesla HQ outside of California. He pledged to move all production outside of California into Nevada and Texas, which is really interesting because the company hasn't said that they were going to open a facility in Texas. And he just kind of said,
well, that's where SpaceX is, right? So I think he's probably going there pretty often for SpaceX. If you follow Elon's social media, he's constantly in Texas sharing right. photos of the SpaceX facility. So, I mean, I think California is broken. I'm a resident and I have been for, I guess, since 2003 or so almost two decades now. And it's a broken state. The taxes are ridiculous. The regulation's ridiculous. You know, quality of life is suffering because of the cost of living. Mm-hmm. And you really do not need to give a company or the employees of a company extra motivation to leave this state. And when you saw that one assemblywoman, Lorena Gonzalez,
yeah.
who was also against, you know, Uber drivers, as we talked about last week, having the
yes.
freelancer position.
Assembly then, Bill 5.
Yeah, the AB 5. She was a proponent of that as well. So she's very anti-business, very pro-worker, I guess, is the way to describe her. And she told Musk to F off. And Musk yeah. replied to her, message received. And this is crazy. I mean, California is going to get itself into a debt spiral, I believe, because the cost mm-hmm. of living is so expensive here. They keep raising taxes to try to you know, provide services. And people who are affluent and who are powerful and who have choices are choosing to leave. And I'm seeing right. it. I've seen a lot of venture capitalists, angel investors, and CEOs go to Florida, Texas, and Nevada. Low tax states, lower regulation, and just less agita in general. So this could be, you know, the canary in the coal mine.
10 years from now, politicians are going to be begging for Tesla to come back, because I assure you that by that time, Tesla's going to have no presence in California, because it's just way too expensive to make cars in the state, right? If, especially if they want to expand and produce cars to the level of Honda or BMW or Volkswagen, right? Yeah. Even if you can shave off $200, $300 off of every unit, if you multiply that by how many cars they're starting to sell,
I mean, that's a substantial cost. Yeah. When they get to a million a year, it's going to be huge. Yeah, it could be. Right. It could be a if it's only, you know, 1% of the cost of a car, that 1%, if the car's got a 10% profit margin, would be 10% more profitable, right? So,
right.
It could be a very big deal. I think California's blowing it. It's really a stupid approach to take to business. And really, it's one of the things that, you know, we're sitting here on May 12th, I think, discussing all of this. You know, right as we're starting to open up, right? We were supposed to open up in May. California moved it to June. Now they're kind of saying retail is going to open up a little bit earlier. We have to have a very logical approach to going back to work. And all the nuance, because of the political situation in America, is being lost. And that's the big tragedy in this, is like, we can't let a small group of people go back to a factory and make cars in a very safe setting. And then that's making people think that this is some grand conspiracy. And then hundreds of them are going to the one beach that's open. Or I don't know if you saw the Colorado, the restaurant that had Mother's Day, and it was insane. Packed. And you're looking at this video and you're going, wait a second. Who is running this restaurant that's putting their employees at risk? The employees aren't wearing masks, it didn't seem like. And none of the people in line outside were wearing masks. Nobody inside was wearing masks. And they're on top of each other, standing around and over the tables that are being packed. It's like, you're all going to kill mom and grandma. Like, wear a goddamn mask. This isn't rocket science, people. It's pretty basic stuff. Wear a mask.
Yeah. And one other thing I'm going to add here is that, like you were saying, Lorena Gonzalez, who she's an assemblywoman down in San Diego, right? And she authored that AB5 bill. I don't think she's ever run a business in her life. By the way, these are all my views. These aren't the views of Inside.com or any other company.
Well, of course. But it happens to be the view of the Inside.com CEO as well, AB5 took out all of the, additionally, took out all the freelance writers, right? And freelance musicians. And anybody who wants to be a freelancer can't be a freelancer. Like, well, I understand the state wants to protect people, but you're actually now working against people working in the state. If people want to be a consultant for 10 hours a week or 10 hours a month or 100 hours a month, let them be a consultant. They're opting into that.
100% agree with you. Yeah. And I don't think she understands that, like, the relationship that government should have with private companies is trying to generate more jobs, right, for people. And
absolutely,
Tesla, like, from what I know, Tesla wages are, you know, you can get a pretty good middle class living in California working at a Tesla production facility. And yes, I know there's been issues with worker safety and whatnot, but that opportunity of, like, middle class jobs in California seems like it's disappearing.
Has there been an issue, or are they on par with everybody else? Like, building stuff in a factory has some inherent amount of risk. We're almost moving to this system where there's no risk involved in anything we do. Is that really the approach we want to take? Because then we should just go to quarantine indefinitely, stay home, nobody takes any risk, and we can live in a nanny state, you know? And I don't think Americans want to live that way. I think Americans are more cut out of the same cloth as, like, when I went to Australia, you know, we asked the captain of the boat that took us to this beach for, like, a day trip. We're like, hey, can we jump off, you know, the boat? And he's like, yeah, just watch out for the salties and the great whites. We're like, okay. You know, like, he basically said, like, there's saltwater crocodiles and great whites in the ocean in Australia. And if you jump in the water, you might be eaten. Would you like to jump in the water? Like, there is a realistic framing of the risks we take. And this whole idea that you can't put a price on a life is farcical. We put prices on life all the time. It's called insurance. We literally have a table that says, this is what your life is worth. If you pay this much, you get this much back. We put a value on life when, you know, certain places in Texas have an 85 mile per hour speed limit, certain places have a 55, right? Mm-hmm. Same situation. They're valuing getting home quicker on average and losing more lives. Literally, they're saying you getting home 10 minutes faster, or everybody getting home 10 minutes faster on this highway and getting to their destination quicker, is more important than the 10 people who are going to die because they would have just been in the hospital if they were going 55, or conversely going 35 miles on the highway.
Yeah. So what do you think are the odds that Tesla just moves all production to Texas in the next 5 years? If you had to take a guess, percentage wise.
I would reframe the bet as, will they have no employees? Essentially, will they move almost everything out of California? I think that's 50-50. Will they move a lot out of California? I think that's 100%. I don't take Elon. I mean, I know Elon uses Twitter like as a creative outlet, but I don't think on a business basis he's wrong here. I mean, he's obviously right. They should open the factory up again and not go out of business and be able to make cars. We have Northern California has like the lowest amount of infection. We got on this earliest, and we're going to be held to the highest standard of going back to work, to the point of which companies might go out of business. It doesn't make much sense. So I take him at his word, and I don't think he's messing around.
Yeah. So when we come back, we're going to be talking about Zoox, which is a autonomous driving startup that's also based in Silicon Valley. Once they rode very high, they were one of the hot shots in, you know, the automated driving space. Now they're trying to raise more money and exploring a sale. And we're going to talk about that more when we come back on the Inside Transportation podcast right after this.
Hey, everybody, I just want to let you know that this episode of Inside Transportation is sponsored by our friends at the Ford Motor Company. Built on the belief that freedom of movement drives human progress from connectivity to autonomy, Ford has one simple goal, and that's to improve the mobility of its customers. Ford has been using technology to shape the future of transportation for over 100 years and is dedicated to solving the world's most pressing mobility issues. What you might not know is that Ford has a series of divisions that make these visions a reality. Ford X is Ford's venture incubator that unites entrepreneurs, designers, and engineers to shape the future of transportation. Ford's City Innovations team brings innovative ideas to life through community workshops, crowdsourcing initiatives, and citywide mobility challenges. And Spin, a property of Ford, brings e-scooter sharing to cities and college campuses. So here's your call to action. To learn more about Ford's work in mobility, autonomous vehicles, and their global efforts to improve mobility for its customers, visit corporate.ford.com. That's corporate.ford.com. Thanks again to Ford for sponsoring independent media like this podcast.
And we're back here on the Inside Transportation podcast. Johan Reno, Jason Calcanis, running through some of the week's hottest transportation topics and news stories. Next, we're going to be talking about Zoox. Zoox is looking to raise more money, and they are also exploring a sale. They hired Catalyst Partners to find a buyer for the company. They're also looking for partnership and acquisition opportunities with automakers, and they're raising money to try to get through the next few months. So they've raised about $1 billion to date, but they generate no revenue, and their landscape is kind of uncertain. They're developing this vehicle that has yet to be seen, has yet to be released. It's apparently really cool and really impressive enough to garner investors, but it's bi-directional and it doesn't have a steering wheel, but it's still a ways away from being released to the public. Last year, the company said a Zoox vehicle reached fewer mistakes than a human on the same route. It's also very unique because, you know, how they're developing their structure is very different from other autonomous driving developers. If you think about a company like Waymo or even, Voyage, for example, they're developing software for a vehicle that they plan to retrofit with LiDAR sensors in most cases. One of the prominent companies that aren't using LiDAR sensors is Tesla, and they're also developing their own, you know, automated driving software. But Zoox is actually producing a vehicle that they can run their software in, right? So not only are they developing software for the vehicle, but they're also developing the vehicle. But because of these roadblocks in developing both pieces, they've been having some trouble getting this vehicle out. Originally, they said they plan to deploy the vehicle in San Francisco by end of year 2021, but apparently it's still far from there. About 10% of their staff has been furloughed, and they have a little over 1,000 employees. With, you know, the current situation and how it's kind of affecting the economy, are we going to start seeing the dominoes fall with self-driving vehicle development in the next few years, Jason?
Yeah, 100%. I think you have so much money being poured into this and so many players going after it that you'll have a little bit of attrition as we get towards the finish line, so to speak. My position on it always was, I believe that two or three people will get to the promised land in the same year or so, because you have an employee pool and a knowledge pool that is being shared across these companies. They're all using a similar sensor array, and you've seen people go from, you know, Apple to Tesla to Zooks to Cruise. And so it's the same group of people, and Uber obviously had their self-driving program. So you're seeing at least a dozen major efforts here. And part of the process of a vibrant capitalist society is capital comes rushing in to a huge opportunity like self-driving, which will reduce tens of thousands of deaths in the United States and hundreds of thousands a year, and will release billions of hours of unproductive time and make them either leisure time, which is a win, or productive time, which is a huge win, some combination of those. It'll also allow the sharing of vehicles, which will reduce the number of vehicles that need to be produced, or allow, you know, 10 people to share each vehicle, whichever way you want to look at it. So there is so much at stake. So much value will be unlocked by self-driving cars that you're looking at hundreds of billions of dollars being poured into the space. So whenever you have that happen, the products and the teams that are making the least progress are going to be able to get less capital than the ones that are showing the most progress. A company like Tesla or a company like Google is going to get a lot more capital because they have access to capital markets, because their performance is better. Zooks, you know, maybe not. Cruise and Uber might be somewhere in between those two, right? And so we'll continue to see attrition, and we'll continue to see companies consolidate and get sold as people, as we get closer to the finish line. So usually you get to the finish line with two players, three players max in any space. So if it was search engines and navigation of the web, or it was, you know, mobile phones and mobile devices, you know, you had Palm and BlackBerry and Nokia, and then Apple emerged, and then Google bought Android. So you had, you know, six or seven players going after the smartphone. And where did we actually wind up? We wound up with two to four major players. You had, you know, two major operating systems, Android and Apple. And then you wind up having, you know, two or three major players, you know, building the actual phones, the hardware.
And this comes on the heels of Waymo. They actually this morning announced that they closed they've raised $3 billion from outside investors, which is very interesting considering that to date, Waymo had self-funded all their autonomous driving operations.
Yeah.
So they're starting to bring people in. I believe the CFO said it was to like get them a little more, a little more conservative, a little bit more focused on the goal of rolling that system out. But it seems like there's a lot of pressure like on these companies to deliver a product that isn't ready yet, and that's still going to face so much regulatory issues, right? And I think that's one of the big roadblocks here with self-driving, is that with a company like Zooks, they don't want steering wheels on the vehicle. They want the vehicle to operate in both directions. They want it to be something that we've never seen on a road. Now, in theory, that's an amazing concept. And if it's been convincing investors that this is the future of transportation, very much will be. But the issue is with the, you know, NHTSA and all these safety organizations that take years to vet all these modifications that are done to a vehicle. You know, if you're an automaker and you don't want to feature a steering wheel, or you don't want to feature side mirrors, or you don't want to feature, you know, a windshield, whatever it is you don't want to include, it's a regulatory process that takes years. An example is Cruise. applied for like a no steering wheel permission. They just wanted to operate a car without a steering wheel. It took about 2 to 3 years. So it's definitely going to be a lot of work for Zoox, and it's probably going to take a lot more money. And at that point, you kind of have to think about, is this the horse I want to bet on?
Yeah, what I would say to all of that is, you know, if you look at the three different approaches, one is, you know, Zoox is going for this Hail Mary. We're gonna leapfrog what's going on in the world. Then you have next up, you know, the folks at Google who are like, we'll put these things in the real world and we'll start our own little taxi service. I think it's in Arizona, you know, in our ride sharing thing. They're taking, you know, a more measured approach. They're not letting consumers have the hardware or use it. And then you look at the approach of, and, you know, I guess Uber would be in that same sort of middle ground. And then you look at Elon's approach and Tesla's approach, which has been really easy to criticize because human beings can do stupid things. Mm-hmm. And human beings take risks. But the truth is, you actually want to know what the risks human beings will take, and you want to get some real world experience. And, you know, I drive on self-driving every day. I just got the update that recognizes stop signs.
How is that? Does it work pretty well?
Yeah, but it because of how conservative Tesla is being, it's kind of like not having the feature at all. It's like having a beta version of the feature, because the way it works is, as you're going to a red light, it stops. And as you're going to a green light, it will stop unless you click down on your turn signal or hit the gas. In other words, it's not going to let you go through a green light. It's not going to let you go through any light. It's just showing you that it knows it's a green light. It will stop you at a red, because stopping you at a red makes perfect sense, right? That's the least risky thing you could do. And the least risky thing you can do is to stop people if they're going to go through a green light, unless they confirm that they want to go through it. So it really is the most conservative execution you could have, which led to one person being confused because they decided to not read the manual and made a video on YouTube about it. And they're like, it doesn't go through green lights. And it's like, no, it does go through green lights. You have to confirm that you want to go through the green light. Just like when you want to change lanes with it, you would confirm it with the steering wheel, with the tapping. So I love the fact that, you know, as a Tesla owner, I'm seeing a little bit of the self-driving experience turn itself over every 6 months, every year. You know, I'm on year 3 or 4 of using autopilot. And in the beginning, it was like adaptive cruise control plus stay in the lane. But you wouldn't use it on, you know, a non-wide highway with, you know, a small number of people. Now you can kind of use it on the surface streets if they're labeled properly. I probably wouldn't personally use it in Manhattan, or I wouldn't use it in San Francisco, like a crowded city street with a lot of pedestrians yet. But you can use it on, like, you know, suburban roads. It's starting to feel pretty tight. And it just gets tighter every time they release a new version. And I like that approach, because as a driver, you're kind of learning the limitations. Like, there were a couple of places where autopilot didn't know what to do and it would ask you to take over. And the reason was, in California, they just hadn't painted the highways correctly or kept the painting up to date. You know, like sometimes you'll have a lane split into two or two lanes split into one, and it hasn't been labeled properly or painted properly. You know, you're kind of seeing those things. But, you know, already having autopilot on for me is safer than not. Because if you do get distracted for a second, you know, whether it's by noise or a child in the back seat, or you dropped your phone or a hot cup of coffee, it wouldn't crash. And I think a lot of crashes that occur are something distracts the driver. Not the driver chooses to be distracted, but something in fact does distract them. Like the great example of like spilling hot coffee on your lap. Well, in those cases, I think it's already saving people's lives. And so for that reason, you know, I like Elon's approach.
Of course, they're collecting all that data.
For sure. Right?
So that's the big advantage that I don't think a lot of people realize that Tesla has, is that instead of having, like, Waymo has, you know, their fleet of vehicles in, like, I don't know, they have a few hundred at this point. Tesla, every one of those vehicles, whenever you drive, Jason, it takes your data anonymously and it learns, and it's able to build those products and make them better.
And the edge cases, right? That's the key. It's any of these work really well on a, you know, 280 highway or 101 highway here in Northern California, where it's labeled perfectly, 99.9% of the time, and drivers and other participants in the roadway do what you expect. It's when people do the unexpected that these things have problems, or the highway's mislabeled. So every time it disengages and asks you to take over, which is your responsibility if you choose to use it, you need to be ready to take over. They tell you that 1,000 freaking times.
Right. Like, well, any car, by the way.
Yeah, like a normal car. It literally is no different than any other car. You have to still pay attention. They learn about the edge cases. And really, this at this point is about edge cases. It's really about pedestrians, bicycles. You know, a stop sign is knocked down, or it's blocked by, you know, somebody put a poster over it, or a tree fell over and, you know, it's blocking the stop sign. Like, those are the situations that these cars are going to have to navigate, quite literally, right? That's the key issue, is the edge cases. And they're really figuring out the edge cases real fast.
Yeah. And when we come back here on the Instant Transportation Podcast, we're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, Uber got a really good deal.
Yum, yum.
We're going to talk about that right after the break.
Hey, everybody, let me take a moment to thank Fenwick & West. They're one of the world's first and leading law firms dedicated to technology and life sciences. They operate in the fast lane of innovation, where ideas often outpace changes in the law. That's where you find Fenwick's autonomous transportation and shared mobility practice, steering startups, technology giants, and major automotive companies through rapidly evolving legal, business, and regulatory challenges, which we talk about here on Inside Transportation all the time. A Silicon Valley original, Fenwick is a national law firm with offices in Mountain View, San Francisco, Seattle, New York, Santa Monica, and even Shanghai. So here's your call to action. Learn more about how Fenwick can help companies tackle the complex legal and business issues of autonomous transportation at fenwick.com. That's FENWICK.com. Thanks again to Fenwick for providing great legal services to me. I use them personally for our investments, and for supporting independent media like Inside Transportation. Let's get back to this amazing episode.
And we're back here on the Inside Transportation Podcast, talking about Uber's $85 million investment in Lime, which is an electric scooter sharing company. Lime raised $170 million in a fundraising round that would value the company at $510 million, which is a 79% drop from its previous valuation. Uber put in about $85 million of the $170 million, and they actually got what I think is a really good deal. They basically, so Uber has their own electric scooter and bike unit called Jump. It hasn't been making that much money for the company. It's actually been a money losing operation for Uber. And as a part of this deal, Lime had to absorb all the Jump unit, right? So Uber is going to save about $300 million because in 2019 they lost that amount. And Lime seems to be making a little bit more money off of so Lime spent about the same amount of money, but they made three times the revenue that Uber's Jump unit made last year. So really, somebody that I really love, Amir from The Information, said that the deal is an admission of defeat with scooters and bike rentals from Uber's part. But I actually think it was a really good deal for Uber. First of all, they absorbed some of Bird and Lime's market share initially and made them less valuable. I would argue, because Uber and Lyft and all these other companies got into scooter sharing, it kind of prevented Bird and Lime from getting their full market value. They also got a good look at the economics in the business and figured out whether it was a business they wanted to be involved in. Ultimately, though, they got a 79% discount on Lime, or in their investment, and they put themselves in a position to acquire the company. So that's also a part of the deal, is that after 2022, or actually between 2022 and 2024, they would have an option to acquire Lime if they wanted to. So yep, they have basically put themselves in a position to acquire the top, globally too, by the way, the top global scooter sharing company, if they wanted to, in 2022, while also absolving them of their investment in, their own business of scooter sharing and bikes. So I actually
it's a big win.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, this is a crazy deal.
Yeah, I mean, it turns out that this may be an okay business, maybe eventually a good business, but it may not be a great business. And as I've said before, I believe this is a feature of Uber's business, but it is not a great core business to own and operate. And I think it'll be very difficult because it only works in certain places, right? Whereas ride sharing works in every place. Like every place is accustomed to cars. But if where you live, you know, has long distances, these scooters don't work. It has to be a Santa Monica, San Francisco type place. If the place is too crowded, like Hong Kong or New York, it doesn't work very well because you run into people and it's too crowded. So there's a sweet spot for these services. And it turns out they might be so expensive to operate that there might not be enough margin in them. And we see this all the time as investors. Consumers love something, mm-hmm. but it doesn't scale. Consumers love something, but when you raise the price to the point of which it becomes profitable, they stop using it. So it might be that at $2 a ride, people love this, but at $7 a ride, which is what it really needs to be to make a profit, people would rather get in a Lyft line or an UberX, right? Mm-hmm. Or an Uber pool, or take the bus. So that's the big challenge, I think, with these businesses is they may only work in certain regions. They may have a very low profit margin. And therefore, it's a nice feature to have in your business, but it may not be the profitable part of your business.
Yeah. I mean, Uber's really been taking advantage of COVID-19 to put together some crazy deals. Today, they also they made an offer to acquire Grubhub as well. So
they did?
Definitely, yeah, they made an offer to, yeah, this happened literally just before the podcast recording. But whoa. I believe they made an all-stock offer to acquire Grubhub, which
wow, that's a big deal.
Absolutely insane. I mean, if you think about market share, right now Uber has 20% market share in the food delivery space. Grubhub has 30%. And combined, they would actually leapfrog DoorDash, which has about 35%. They would instantly become the number one food delivery service. So when you think about all these like ancillary services like food delivery and scooter sharing, which is basically the two businesses that Uber has really focused into, you know, they've really been focusing on these two non-ride hailing businesses over the past few years. And they have, over the course of the past month, put themselves in a position to be a leader in both spaces through acquisition. Obviously, a lot of people kind of knew that this was coming. I think you had even mentioned on a previous podcast that there was going to be some point where there was
consolidation, for sure,
an absorption of. Yeah, I mean, it's just too capital intense, right? And they're just constantly fighting over customers, offering so many subsidies that financially, it just doesn't make a lot of sense, like how the current structure of both, you know, food delivery and scooter sharing has been working.
Yeah, it's, I think, too many players going after the same market leads everybody to lose money to gain market share and to try to be the dominant player. And it's part of the boom bust cycle, as I sort of referred to, when you see all these people going after the big prize of self-driving. Clearly, delivering food is a huge business. But if everybody is trying to grow and they're willing to do it at a loss, then it looks optically like it is a money-losing business. But then you see this boom-bust cycle happen. And if Uber and Grubhub can you know, work it out, I'm reading here on a headline, Uber reportedly rejects all stock offer to buy Grubhub. So maybe they can't settle on a price, but that means they're probably going to when you see something like this happen. And this will lead to the companies being able to charge what they should charge for the service and hit economies of scale because everybody has duplicated their CEO, their CFO, their operating system, et cetera. In other words, the 20% player, if there were five 20% players and they each had a CEO and they each had a tech team, if you go down to two, you're taking three tech teams out of the picture, right? At all mm-hmm. of that cost. You're reducing down the customer support teams by a magnitude. And then that means whoever's left can actually run a profitable business. And that's why you see consolidation in markets until you get to roughly two to three major players. And this will be right. A duopoly, just like most markets. a duopoly is usually defined by two players having the overwhelming majority of a market, 80% or more, is what I would say. So that's what happened in ride sharing. That's what will happen in food delivery.
Yeah. Kind of moving on here on the Inside Transportation podcast, a topic we've actually been touching upon in some previous issues is how air travel is transforming. And we actually just learned that Frontier Airlines, which is a budget airline in the U.S., is going to start checking passenger temperatures on June 1st. So passengers and crews with temperatures over 104 degrees are going to be denied entry and rebooked on another flight. The company has ordered about 500 thermometers to execute the process. Earlier, or last week, Frontier actually scrapped plans to charge passengers for sitting next to an empty middle seat. Another airline based here in North America, Air Canada, will start checking passenger temperatures on May 15th. One interesting quote I saw this week is that Booking.com CEO Glenn Fogel says there needs to be a vaccine before passengers feel confident about traveling again. My issue with this rule change, and I think you had actually mentioned that this is probably going to be a part of the new normal eventually, but what happens if you have a high temperature and you can't board? Yeah, they can move your flight, but what if you get stuck in some city because you're running a high temperature? You maybe caught the flu or something like that.
Yeah, you got to take
now
a train.
You have to find another way to get home.
And correct.
It seems like if this becomes the new normal, it might actually prevent, like, because I guess,
traveling.
You know, the purpose, the purpose or the reason why they implemented this policy was to make passengers feel more comfortable about traveling. And it seems like it might backfire, but I don't know what your thoughts are, Jason. Do you feel like more comfortable getting your temperature read before boarding a flight?
I think it should be until we have the spread of this, you know, really low, you know, when they talk about R naught, you know, like under, does each person infect more than one person or less than one person? And if they infect much less than one person, then eventually, you know, depending on the frequency at which people see each other, you know, you have less people getting, you know, the wave kind of dies down. And so that's really what this is doing. If you can keep the people who are contagious off of planes or keep some of them off of planes, it's worth doing. The question really is anybody at this point in time going to take a flight that is not critical, not essential in the rest of 2020? And would you take a flight in 2020? A recreational flight, an unnecessary flight?
That's a really good question.
Do you have any plans?
I've been thinking about it. For background, I love traveling. I'll usually travel twice a month. And, you know, thankfully, you know, so I've been working for Inside for about, you know, like 3 years. The beauty of this job is that you can do it from anywhere, right? So I've taken advantage of that. And, you know, I'll fly all throughout the country. I'll go visit friends. I've racked up a ton of points, right? So for me, this has been a really tough time because I'm kind of just stuck at home for once. But so I was thinking about 2020 because I'm like, man, I really want to go to California. I want to go to Idaho because I love going up to Sun Valley. I don't know if I could, though.
Road trip. Why not just road trip? And just take out your Model Y, your long range dual moto Model Y that I got you, and go for it.
Thank you so much, Jason.
Yes, it's on the way.
I appreciate it.
I actually sat in one for the first time this week, and it is a gorgeous car. I'm
100%. Yeah, what did you think about that versus the Model 3?
It's so much bigger inside. It's bonkers. Like, there
really?
Is so, it really is. They figured something out between the Model 3 and this car about how to get more space in the car. And it's unbelievably large inside. And it starts to feel like more like my Model X than my Model 3 is what I would say. You feel a little higher up. You feel like there's tons of leg room, tons of room in the back for bags, stacking bags, secret compartments. It's just voluminous in its nature. But, you know, I think that is the big point, is that it's going to become, people are going to do a lot of camping this summer. They're going to do, and there's a cool new Airbnb called Hip Camp that was on the podcast This Week in Startups. And that my friend Bill Gurley, who also backed Uber invested in. It's a marketplace of campsites, hipcamp.com. I'm not an investor yet. Would love to be. And they're basically getting...
Is that the one with the Airstream trailers?
It could be anything. Basically, if you have land, you can just have nothing on the land. You could have, a shower and a porta potty or something. You could have an electrical hookup. And people just rent your land from you, and they obviously do the insurance, and then people are putting yurts on them. But think about like a camping version of Airbnb. Mm. But so I really think hotels are going to have a hard time because going in and out of elevators, especially the tall ones, and having those people in that air conditioning, because they do seem to think that recirculated air is an issue here. So if you're driving, you're in your own little air box, no problem there. And if you go to a campsite or an Airstream, okay, it's an Airstream where you're recirculating, at worst, your air, right? Mm-hmm. Not being in a motel or hotel, God forbid, with an elevator and tight hallways and windows that don't open. I would never get on an airplane in 2020 or go to a Vegas-style hotel, high-rise hotel where you can't open the windows, right?
Yeah.
I would only stay in an Airbnb, apartment-like situation, where it exited onto the street or something, or a house where I just know that the only people I'm going to interface with are the people who clean the place, right? And if they clean the place, they're probably tested, and they're cleaning the place, so they're probably really clean. This is going to be a big change. I think you're going to be driving. I mean, road tripping, right?
Yeah. So are you not going to take any flights for the rest of the year?
I won't take any commercial flights, that's for sure. Once in a while, I'll be on a private plane. I don't own a private plane, but a couple of my friends have them. And once in a while, I'll hop a flight with somebody. So I would do a private plane, sure. In fact, I did do a private plane at the beginning of this. I had a trip to LA, and a friend of mine was flying down. So I just jumped on his little Pilatus airplane, which is like a Swiss turboprop. It's not like a jet. It's just a cool turboprop. Pilatus PC-12, I think it's called. It's a really cool plane. Perfect for like getting from... and I think this will be a kind of transportation option. It's what Surf Air uses. Really enjoyed that one. So I think you're going to see some of those private aviation things do really well as people get concerned about infecting themselves in 2020 or their families. And I think you're going to see the road trip. It's going to make a huge comeback. Road trip culture is back.
I'm excited for that. Yes. So moving on to our weekly segment, Dope or Nope, where we decide if something is dope or nope. This vehicle may look familiar to you this week. It's the 2021 Fiat 500e. It's Fiat's latest electric vehicle, which is basically a revamp of their existing 500e, but they've made many improvements in it, including making it into this cool, like convertible style vehicle. So Jason, what do you think of this vehicle? Dope or nope?
It's a nope for me. I don't like these really small vehicles. I had a Mini Cooper. I did like that. That was slightly bigger, I believe, than this car. I like a four-door car. And I just don't like these tiny cars. I don't know the range of this one. That would be a mitigating factor. If this thing goes 350, 400 miles range, and I don't know the price.
Take a guess. What do you think this what do you think the range is on this vehicle?
Well, I know if Tesla made it, it would have a 500-mile range because the thing is tiny. But this is made by Fiat, which is incompetent. So I'm going to guess it has a 200-mile range.
Spot on.
Really?
Did I guess it perfectly? Yes, 200 miles of range.
Like literally exactly 200. So this is what 200. Keeps happening with these idiots who make these competitors to, I'm going to try and guess the price now. I'm literally not looking this up, but these idiots don't understand that if they really wanted to compete against Tesla, maybe try to beat them on one or two value propositions. And here, with this tiny car, you could easily put enough batteries in it to go 400 miles. And then you could say, this goes 400, a Model 3 goes 300 or 280. Like, look, we go an extra 100 miles between charges. Yeah. Isn't that amazing? You could drive directly to Vegas without stopping.
Right.
Now, in terms of cost.
So next part here is cost. What
let me guess that.
Cost?
All right.
Reminder, this is a Fiat.
It's a Fiat. It's got four seats, but two doors. So I'm assuming the seats in the back are tiny. You don't have a lot of room for bags. Mm-hmm. But they have been making this car, I believe, the Fiat 500. I think they've been making that for a decade in America.
Yes.
And the electric one, I think they've been making for 4 or 5 years. Am I ballpark correct here?
Which is funny because I don't know if you remember this, but FCA CEO Sergio Marchionne, rest in peace, he's no longer with us. But once he actually asked people not to buy the old Fiat 500e because they were losing $14,000 every time they sold one.
Oh my lord, the incompetence is unbelievable.
Because they sold it as a compliance vehicle in California to meet emission standards.
Right.
You know, I don't know if you know much about compliance vehicles, but basically all these companies were forced to make a really bad electric car that had, like, I think Honda came out with the compliance EV and the range on it was like 60 miles.
So they literally, unintended consequences, the government in California, we talked about how unique this government is. Instead of saying like, we're going to just tax you, they say, you have to make something. We're forcing you. We're putting a gun to your head. In order to sell gas power cars here, you got to make some electric. You got to have an electric offering. Good intent, but bad execution in terms of the rule. They make it so onerous with regulation that they make cars they specifically make so people don't buy them. So they make ankled cars, right? Making a car with this under 100 mile of range is basically a big F you to the customer and saying to them, don't buy this car. Because nobody wants a car that goes under 100 mile range. Because what if you have to go somewhere that's an hour away? You can't.
Yeah. I mean, this car, though, specifically to give more details, it's only going to be available in Europe. And you know, if you're familiar with, if you've been to Europe, I mean, streets are pretty small.
Yeah, it's for tooling around.
You know, too far. Yeah. But the price of this.
Hold on.
I'm going to
give you
the.
Hold on. Let me tell you the price. Model 3, you can get into in the 50s. So this is smaller. It's not as good as the Model 3, but it's incompetent, the people there, and it gets 100 miles of range. So they're going to charge
$42,000. Wow.
I'm just guessing. Did I guess it right?
Jason Calcanis. Yes. $42,000.
I guessed it to the two. I literally just said, what is like, you know, 20% cheaper than 50K. And I just was like 40, 42, something in that range. It's literally 42K. So this is garbage for 42K. Why wouldn't you spend the extra 8,000 and get the Model 3, the best car ever made?
Maybe you just really like the Fiat 500.
That's not possible. But that's not possible, Joanne. It's a hard nope for me on all fronts. Nope on the
By
price.
The way.
This would only be a dope if it was 30,000. At 30,000, it would be dope.
You know what, though, Jason? Can your Model 3 flip the top open, though? Like this fantastic Fiat 500 that turns into a convertible.
That's barely a convertible. That's just like a big sunroof in my mind. That's just weird. I don't like those kind of drop tops. If we're going to go convertible, I want a hard top that does like the triple recess into the back. That's the proper, you know, 2020 style convertible.
Okay, so last question here before we end today's episode.
Wait, is it dope or nope for you?
Why would I drive this?
Yeah, it's a nope. It's a hard
nope. This is terrible. Why would I spend all that money on? Oh my gosh. I wish that they paid you $14,000 to drive this vehicle.
I mean, but let's play this game. At $30,000, dope or nope? Still nope.
No.
But at $20,000, it would be dope.
For you?
For anybody. For $20,000 to be able to go 200 miles electric, it's not dope?
I mean, at some point, and the reason why the FCA CEO said that, and I remember my friend telling me this, he said that he could get a lease on the Fiat 500 electric for $52. I'm not joking. It was $52 a month, zero down out the door. Wow. They were begging people to take them at some point. So even then, he didn't take the car. So the thing is, obviously, we're in the U.S. We have different tastes. We like maybe bigger vehicles. I'm sure, you know, in Europe, they like a smaller vehicle that they can drive around, you know, the streets and whatnot. I could see it. I mean, I remember spending time in Spain and seeing how many small cars there were. And I maybe saw like two Teslas, you know. So, but the final question I have for you here. So this vehicle can go 0 to 62 miles per hour in how many seconds?
Oh, well, let's see. 0 to 62.
I'll give you a range.
No. Hold on. I'd rather just spit the arrow here. Since I hit two bullseyes, let's see if I can do three. We know that a Tesla can do 0 to 60 in their slower vehicles, like 5 seconds, and in their performance vehicles under 4. Mm-hmm. So this is done by an incompetent company as opposed to a competent world-class company, world-changing company. So I had 2 seconds, I think 7 seconds.
Sadly, you can't win them all.
Oh, okay.
9 seconds.
How many?
9 seconds.
Nine, not 7.5. Nine.
Nine.
They figured out a way to take an electric vehicle's
You thought they were one incompetent, given. But wait.
The one given in an electric vehicle is that it's going to be fast off the line.
Yes.
Somehow these dipshits figured out how to slow this thing down to the point at which it's as slow as an ICE engine. How on earth did they do it?
Nick, our producer, said he could run faster.
Yeah, 0 to 60 in that. True. He could 0 to 60 in 9 seconds. Oh my Lord. Is that, wait, how is that possible? Did they put cinder blocks in the trunk or something?
They what probably did because that's Fiat Chrysler for you.
Did they? I mean,
I hope they never sponsor this podcast.
Does it have nine? I was about to say, we lost this podcast. Does it have 9-inch wheels on it? I mean, did they put like
dirt? I don't know how FCA found a way to make the world's worst vehicles. I just don't know. I just don't know how to do it.
And they, you know, the old Fiat, an ex-girlfriend years ago, who I dated in New York, had that Fiat convertible, the two-seater from the 70s. Mm. And it was so much fun to drive. It was like a little roadster.
Right.
Why don't they just make that electric? Oh, I know. It would sell. Like, can you imagine that little Fiat? What do they call them? 152s or something?
I don't remember at the top of my head. No, but I know which one you're talking about, and it looks really, really sleek.
And they brought back Alfa
Romeo. They brought back Alfa Romeo for a little while. I think they still have it in market, but apparently those cars haven't been moving either. So
I would say that's. I like the old Alfa Romeos, the convertible ones. Those were, but I heard they were a nightmare. Like only buy that if you own a European mechanic shop. Like if you happen to own the European mechanic in town, you can buy an Alfa Romeo.
Yes. Anyway, thank you so much for listening to the Inside Transportation podcast. That was a lot of fun, Jason.
And I just want to tell you one thing that broke while we were on this call, since we're into the breaking news right now.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Los Angeles County officials are recommending that the stay-at-home order be extended for the next blank. Los Angeles County officials are recommending that the stay-at-home orders be extended for the next blank. Johan, fill in the blank. Do
2 months.
3 months until August. Can you imagine what will happen in Los Angeles if they try to keep people in their homes for 5 freaking months?
And knowing that the Bay Area is always a little more conservative than LA. Jason, you might be staying at home for the rest of your life at this point.
No, I will not. I will be selling my home and moving to Austin, Texas, and eating barbecue.
Come join us for some brisket and barbecue.
Was on Redfin the other day looking at houses in Austin. Trigger warning to my team. I was like, if they can't work this out in California, like, I need to be somewhere where we're allowed to go to work and go out and get some brisket.
Yes, please bring out the smoker. By the way, I know Jason makes a really good brisket because of the photos he's been sharing on Twitter.
Sure. Try.
And I hope you can send me some one day. I really want to try your brisket.
When you're in Cali, I'll have you over and I'll do my best bark and some cement tips. I got the Traeger grill, which is considered like you know, like one of the most advanced ones, but it broke after about 10 smokes. Like the fan broke.
Oh man.
So I got to get a new fan.
So I heard the Traeger is made in China, and that's why they have a lot of quality issues, because they used to be made in the U.S.
So
the one I've been thinking about getting is the Green Mountain Grill, because it's made in the U.S.
Is that the Seattle one that was Green Mountain, was people who worked at Traeger previously or something?
I don't know if they have.
There was some group of people who worked at Traeger, and they kind of broke up, and like one group went Traeger and the other group started a new brand, and it was over this Made in the USA thing, was what I heard after researching.
It could be, I haven't read up much on their history, but I heard they make some really good products. So
it's really cool when you can. What's nice with the Traeger is You can really keep the temperature consistent. So when you make mm-hmm. brisket in an oven, you know, it's at 200 degrees for 14 hours. When you make right. it in a smoker, you've got to constantly try to keep the temperature around 200, but you pop yeah. up to 350, you go back down to 150. And this keeps it very consistently, you know, between 190 and 220. And you basically get to watch it on your phone and an alarm goes off yeah. if it hits the wrong temperature.
I've seen that. That's so awesome that you can tend your brisket or your ribs from your phone and just yes. set it and forget it.
Set it and forget yes. it. I mean, you still have to go out and check it every hour as far as I'm concerned, or every two, but you don't need to be drinking beer next to it. So if you're in the brisket cooking to sit in a chair next to the brisket for 12 hours, this might ruin that experience because you could leave for 2 hours and go to movies.
Yes. I know a lot of people out here love that though. So.
Yeah. Exactly. Anyway, no, I mean, I think that's part of the pastime. All right. Great yeah. job, everybody.
All right. Thanks. Take care. And we'll see you next week. Bye.
All right.